Been discovered based on some work by the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Our guest joining us right now, Paul Kersey, is the Director of Labor Policy at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. They're based in Midland, and free market think tank. They provide all kinds of research and policy papers, a great website, mackinac.org. He has a Bachelor of Arts degree in economics from U of M Dearborn, and a Juris Doctor from the University of Illinois, practiced law for a while, then off to D.C., was on the U.S. House Government Reform and Oversight Committee, spent 3 years at the National Right to Work Committee as Director of State Legislation, now with the Mackinac Center. Paul Kersey, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, Ron.
Morning. So what inspired the Mackinac Center here to file some Freedom of Information requests to look into state records to discover that basically it looks like what taxpayer money is supporting the unions here?
Well, this has been going on for decades in the state of Michigan. But what we decided to do is we wanted to get the specific amounts and specific unions. What's going on is the state signs contracts with these different unions calling for agency fee. And basically what that means is that the state will turn over union dues to these different unions.
So basically means if the state, a lot of employees that work for the state are members of the union, their union dues deducted from their check, mm-hmm. and the state then takes that money and puts it into the union account.
Yeah, that's basically how it works. The thing about it is that the actual employees don't have a whole lot of input on the process. The state signs the contracts, the state collects the funds, the state turns them over to the unions. And we're talking about pretty substantial amounts. We're not talking about anything that's going to turn the entire budget round over all by itself. We're talking about $17 million. But it is a substantial amount of money, and it goes to unions without a whole lot of accountability for what they do with it.
I say when it's not a lot of money, that is a lot of money, but especially when you think about the governor wants to cut arts funding, wants to cut funding in half for agriculture service, wants to cut all kinds of funding. So then it does become a lot. Why does the state pay this fee? It seems like the state would be doing the unions a favor by directly depositing the employees' union dues into the union account.
Well, we've sort of been sleepwalking through this whole process. It's the main reason that it's done this way is there's two. One, the unions like it this way. They like being in a position where they can rely on getting hundreds of thousands of dollars from the state without having to go to individual employees and ask for support. And second, because that's just sort of how we've always done it in Michigan. Whether it was practical, whether it was wise, we sort of were, you know, this is sort of a leftover from the days when the state was prosperous and we could afford to be sort of sloppy about how we spent money.
So when there's a union contract up for negotiation again with the state of Michigan, would the state, do you think, have any leverage if they sat down and said, look, we've been doing this for years and we don't need to. We are not any longer going to pay a fee since we're actually doing you a favor?
It would be difficult, but yes, the state could take that position, and the state, if they really wanted to, could probably make it stick. The process of collective bargaining with state employees is one that the state creates, and the state wanted, the state conceivably could cease collective bargaining outright with these employees. It certainly could put its foot down and say, we are not going to collect agency fees for you any further.
Meaning, if you are a member of the union, you have to mail in your check or get it to them some other way.
Yeah, meaning that that individual employees would have the choice and the responsibility to support the union.
Okay, the choice though, that would be a whole new law, wouldn't it?
Not necessarily. Not in the case, at least not in the case of state government employees, because even as the law stands right now, the state could say we don't want to have the agency fee clause in there anymore. We don't want to collect these union dues for you anymore, and the state could negotiate a contract that says that.
So $17 million a year is what you figure the state revenue, which comes from taxpayers, is then via a fee process going directly to which unions? Substantial unions in the state?
Yeah, unions that are pretty well known. We're looking at about $17.6 million overall, mm-hmm. Of which about $5.8 million goes to the UAW. Just a shade under $5 million goes to SEIU Local 526M. There's another SEIU Local 517M that gets about $2.4 million. About 2.2 million goes to Ask Me. About a little more than 1 million going to the State Troopers Association, and another million or so going to Ask Me Council 25.
When the union receives this targeted fee money from the state of Michigan, can they do anything with it, or is there any kind of protection that says you can't turn around and use this now to for any political purposes?
The unions really have pretty much a free hand with how this money is spent. There isn't any mechanism in place, certainly not on the state level, to ensure that these funds are spent on employee representation. There is no state union accountability law. There is a federal accountability law that applies to a couple of these union groups, but not for the state troopers, for Ask Me in particular. And there really isn't much of a mechanism in the hands of workers either to ensure that union dues are spent on the right purposes. There is a legal case out there that allows employees to limit their dues amount, but that's a very clumsy process. And frankly, from what we've seen, the unions tend to overstate the amount that they spend on representation. So that mechanism isn't very effective, even if it were used.
So they could be, among other things, they could be spending it on lobbying efforts, on TV, radio commercials to promote the Employee Free Choice Act or anything they want to.
Yes. In fact, it's almost certain that they are. The only question is how much.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So is this, you used Freedom of Information access requests to uncover this and get the details of what how much state money goes towards these union fees. You said it's been going on for a while, but, I mean, is this new knowledge to a lot of people? Will this be new to some of the lawmakers?
I think it will be, because this has been going on for a long time, but I don't know if people fully appreciate just what the process is, how it works, and what sorts of amounts are involved, especially if you're not a union employee, a union worker yourself. You may not realize that these union dues amount to upwards of $400 per member, and these are actually fairly modest. A lot of other unions have union due structure that go up to $600, $700 per worker over the course of a year.
And just so I understand, the money that the state, as the employer, pays to the union is basically a fee, like a fee for each worker?
Yeah, that would be one way of looking at it. It is supposed to represent union membership dues that are supposed to be paid by individual workers. But like I said, because of the way it's structured, it's the state agreeing to pay this. It's the state that actually does pay this. And the individual workers don't have a whole lot of input on how it's done.
All right. So do you know any of these contracts due up at any time soon?
It'll be a couple more years before they negotiate any of these contracts.
Well, I hope you keep this on the archives, and I would certainly want to make an issue of that at that time and suggest the state not keep doing things the way they do, especially if the budget is in the same shape or similar shape, even if it's not in a few years. Say, since you're on the line and you've done a lot of labor research, even we're on the National Right to Work Committee, I want to ask you a couple just basic questions, rudimentary questions, so we all better understand. When we hear that Michigan is not a right-to-work state, and if it was, it would improve the climate for employers. It would keep more manufacturers here. Or we hear that the reason some manufacturers leave to go down south is because they're right-to-work states. What exactly does that mean, and how would that change if Michigan were to become a right-to-work state?
Well, getting back to the example that we were talking about with the state, even, right-to-work says is that you cannot negotiate an agency fee clause as part of a collective bargaining agreement. And what this means is that workers have the choice to decide whether or not the union has earned their support. Now what you get is a union that is more accountable to individual workers because it has to go to those workers and ask them nicely for their support. And in the process, when you make unions more accountable to workers, you make the state more attractive to employers. And that is what's borne out by the record. For a five-year period, around the from 2001 to 2006, during that five-year period, right-to-work states were adding jobs at twice the rate of non-right-to-work states. And you can do this without cutting into wages. As a matter of fact, wages for right-to-work states, personal income for right-to-work states, has been catching up with the non-right-to-work states. There are already several right-to-work states where personal income is higher per capita than in Michigan. I'm talking about states like Virginia, Texas, Florida. A number of other right-to-work states are poised to overtake us. Alabama is probably going to overtake us in the next several years.
So, again, I mean, unions can still organize in a right-to-work state.
Yes.
If they want to organize, and if they are even organized, they have to ask the employees if they want to be in the union.
And, well, they have to ask the employees to join the union outright, and they have to ask employees for their financial support.
Okay.
Yes.
And what if you have 500 employees and only 300, say only 400 want to be in the union? Do you still have the union? Can 100 still work there and opt out?
Yes, that's how it works.
And in Michigan, is it more difficult for employees to opt out then?
Well, as a practical matter, it's close to impossible for employees to opt out.
So that's another, I mean, that would be a significant difference then in right-to-work and non-right-to-work states.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing. In a right-to-work state, you do have, you know, the workers that decline to join the union are still covered by that collective bargaining agreement.
Oh.
That's the factor. That's the way that the process actually works.
All right, well, that actually doesn't seem fair. If you don't want to support the union, they go in and bargain a good deal, but you don't have to pay the dues?
Well, yes and no. There's a couple of things for this. First of all, the number of workers who opt not to join a union in right-to-work states is quite modest. I think if you look at the numbers of workers who are covered by collective bargaining agreements versus the number who join, even in Mississippi, which is the most anti-union state probably out there, three-quarters of workers opt to join the union. The second thing is you can't just assume that every worker benefits from having a collective bargaining agreement in place there. If you're a particularly skilled worker, but all the promotions and all of the layoffs are done entirely by seniority, that means that you have to wait longer than really you probably should to get a promotion, and you're much more vulnerable if things go downhill.
Right.
So you can't just assume that every worker actually benefits from having a union representative.
Okay. Now, the other thing, if you have just a few more minutes.
Yeah, sure.
We have our Chamber of Commerce and regional chambers of commerce are putting on a seminar for employers Friday of this week, 10 o'clock till noon at the NMC Olson campus, Olson Center. And it's about this Employee Free Choice Act, or card check as it's come to be known. President Obama supported it as a senator. There's support in the House. Whether there's enough votes in the Senate, I guess, remains to be seen, but there's belief that it could pass, and soon. What impact does that have on employers in Michigan if the Employee Free Choice Act becomes law?
Well, here's the problem with the Employee Free Choice Act in a nutshell.
Yep.
The law was designed to, I mean, it really was, for all intents and purposes, designed to encourage and empower unions to resort to trickery or even violence to organize workplaces in places where their support really is going to be pretty thin otherwise. The card check mechanism is a very unreliable way of measuring employee support. You can sign the card. You have no idea whether the person who actually signed it is a real union supporter or whether he's just signing because he was confused about what the card meant, or he may have even been intimidated and forced, basically intimidated and pushed into signing a card that he simply did not want to sign.
And this
there's no way to tell what that card actually represents. And then when you add there's another aspect of Employee Free Choice Act that doesn't get as much attention, and that's the binding arbitration provision. And what that means is that you can have an arbitrator come in and basically decide what the terms are going to be for working without the employer's input, without the or without the employer's approval, without the union's approval even.
Okay.
So you've got the government basically coming in and deciding what working conditions are going to be.
And if that happens in that kind of a case, or if a union organizes easier in a shop or a work site, and they say, well, here's what we decided now. The pay is now going to go up to this. The benefits will now be at this level. Days off will be at this level, so on and so forth. Can the employee at the employer say, all right, well, that's a little more than I can really afford or want to pay, so we're going to have to lay three people off before we begin this new situation?
That's a very real risk, is that an arbitrator will come in, doesn't understand how the business actually works, doesn't understand what the economic climate is, and saddles both sides with an agreement that's either too generous or too stingy. I mean, this can work either way.
Yep.
And you can have employees laid off.
So can you assume if the Employee Free Choice Act passes, Card Check Act, if that passes, do you think we'll have more union-organized workplaces in Michigan?
Almost certainly, yes, and in particular in Michigan, because Michigan does not have a right-to-work law. Which means that a union that can resort to underhanded tactics to get themselves installed in a workplace, they can count on getting those agency fees and union dues. So the motivation for them to resort to underhanded tactics is especially strong in Michigan.
Right. So if that happens, you get more unions in Michigan. Now they're negotiating using their tactics, their expertise in negotiating with an employer. They're going to try to suck out more money and more benefits. As a result, though, even without the mediator, then you could have an employer say, well, if I'm going to be forced by law to pay a higher wage and more benefits, they still could lay some people off then as a result, yes?
Yeah, that's a very real risk.
All right, let's see here. Somebody just called. Do you have to join a union if you hire in at a company with a union at today? If you go to work somewhere they have a union, do you have to become a member of that union?
It depends on whether or not you are part of the bargaining unit. But the short answer is if your coworkers basically are forced to be part of the union, then yes, you will be obligated to either join the union formally or pay what's called an agency fee in lieu of regular union dues.
And what role do unions play, or should unions play? I mean, some people say, "Oh, this guy is just an anti-union guy." But in your research, your opinion, what good have unions done, and what role should they play today in our economy?
Well, there is a place for unions in our economy. There are going to be workplaces where, in order to get fair treatment, workers are going to the best way to do this would be for workers to present a united front to management, and there are places where employees would be well served by having expert representation, who can come, you know, an expert representative who can come in and know what kind and know who knows the business and is able to negotiate a better deal for them than they would have gotten on their own, because they know what's going on. The key for unions is expertise and real support from workers. Right now you have a union, a labor law in general, that doesn't reward unions for expertise, doesn't reward them for, and makes real worker support sort of an afterthought.
Mm.
If you want to have a stronger union movement, what you need is to have union membership, and actually union representation be voluntary, so that individual workers, if they do not accept the union and they do not believe the union is representing them well, can actually speak for themselves, can actually negotiate their own deals. Let workers decide what's in their best interest as individuals. A lot of them will still decide to join unions and have unions support them.
Yep. Okay. Do you think the Employee Free Choice Act will pass? I mean, I hear the Senate's really the only place it would be stopped.
It's really hard to say.
Okay.
There is a very strong opposition that is being raised to this. We did an article that just ran today in Human Events about the dangers of this bill. So it's really hard to say from this distance, but it's certainly not a done deal.
All right. Well, listen, thank you for your sharing.